This is CliffCentral.com.
Richard, are we on track with the financial pack for my presentation to the board next week?
Well, hopefully. The team's very short-staffed, and it's taking such a long time to find a suitable financial manager for the division. We're way behind on all our forecasts and reporting.
Why don't you speak to the finance team? They're a consultancy that can help you with an experienced interim financial manager. You can have somebody to help you almost immediately. They'll hit the ground running with no long-term contracts and no upfront placement fees.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our business section of our business masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio today is Safia Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
How's it, Richard?
Last week, we spoke to Miles Thess, head of strategic services at Eiffel Corp, about Eiffel Corp and the world of education and technology. So if you want to grab that podcast, download it from our website. Our guest today is none other than Christy Mahiri. We're going to be chatting to her about her experiences as a woman entrepreneur and as CEO of Law Trust, the information security solutions provider. Christy, thank you for joining us. Great to have you on the show. So give us a little bit of background about Law Trust and what you actually do. It's a, you know, the name Law Trust sounds a little bit
serious.
Tell us what Law Trust is and what you do.
Law Trust is a confusing title. So our company, we started Law Trust 11 years ago to meet the growing demand for digital identities and for trust in the cyber world. So we are an information security company.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tell us a little bit about what you do on a day-to-day basis. I mean, we say digital security. Just elaborate a little bit more about what product sets are sitting inside there.
Yeah, so 11 years ago, we saw the growing demand for trust, and today we actually involve significant projects with governments and large organizations where they're all implementing their digital trust.
Okay, so when you say digital trust, that's knowing who I'm dealing with on the other side of an electronic transaction, so to speak.
Yeah, so our main role is to actually protect these customers in the on the new cyber battlefields.
Okay.
So we have to protect them from all the cyber criminals.
Okay.
And, you know, it's an amazing journey for us to be part of because people are just doing business in the digital world. You know.
Yeah. So I guess if I was to draw a parallel, and I'm trying to draw parallels here for our listeners. So just like I have a physical fingerprint, so to speak, that confirms my identity, and that's recorded by our friends at Home Affairs and people and maybe anywhere else that I've used my fingerprint. In much the same way, you have a, let's call it a digital fingerprint that confirms who you are, and that can span a whole host of things that, that confirm who you are digitally to one party to another, if I understand you correctly.
Mm.
Okay. Now, just give us a little bit of, you know, you started in 2006, okay, so not that long ago, although it sounds like
11 years
is a long time. But for me, the world has moved so fast in the last 3 years, 5 years, never mind the last 11 years. So just take us through a little bit of, let's call it, the growth path from those humble beginnings. I mean, back in 2006, you know, people were still trying to figure out what this electronic banking thing was and what the internet was, and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, I guess people back then didn't have a full appreciation of what cyber crime and the need for cybersecurity actually was, possibly back then. Or they maybe were starting to get an inkling that this is something that needs some attention. But you guys must have been right at the forefront of that, that industry and that space. Talk to us a little about where it started and how it grew.
Yeah, it definitely was bleeding edge.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to say bleeding edge. I think some people take that to be a negative, but yeah. Okay, so new novel and some blood in the water to try and figure it out.
We have all the battle scars.
Okay.
So when we started Law Trust, the objective was to actually, or our vision was to have a digital identity for every person in the country, every citizen. And because as you have your passport in real life, you need a passport in cyberspace and a unique way to identify yourself when you interact because you don't see a person.
I like that analogy. So just like you have a physical passport, you have a digital, let's call it your digital passport.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was your objective, your goal, your vision.
Yes, and we were very fortunate to actually achieve it in 2013 mm-hmm. when we were awarded the Home Affairs National ID Card project.
So that's you guys who did that. I must tell you, the one thing that I, for all the negativity that many people have about many things from a government perspective in our country, the one thing that I can honestly say, and having dealt with other countries, let's call them Home Affairs type scenarios, elsewhere in the continent and elsewhere in the world, I must tell you, I think our Home Affairs Department, and particularly passports, IDs, the likes, it's an absolute pleasure to deal with them.
Yeah.
Absolute pleasure. And I mean, nowadays I see, you know, I can do your your stuff with Home Affairs via the bank, via some of the banks, and do some work that way. And the motor vehicle licensing world is also going in that direction. And I'm going, wow, guys, you know, for all that we have so much to say about, you know, South Africa and government and all the rest, that's one part where I must take my hat off to them and say, I think they've done a fabulous job. So you helped them in that process. Okay, well, it's nice to speak to the people that were behind the success.
Yeah, so on the ID card, there's the digital identity on it. So that's the space, the bit that we play in.
Okay.
So going forward with e-government and e-citizens, you know, you will be able to actually use your digital identity on the card when you transact with municipalities or, you know, maybe in the future even voting.
Yeah, and verify exactly who you are.
Yeah.
I'm busy looking for my ID card as we speak.
So, Christine, this is an incredibly interesting and different and new kind of industry to be in. It wasn't around until, 20, 25 years ago at all. What does it take to just make the decision? I'm not even saying being in the business. What does it take to just make the decision to do something that I don't know too many other people in the country, if anyone else, is doing?
Yeah, I've been passionate about security. So in my previous career, I worked at National Intelligence.
Okay.
So when I left, I went into cyberspace, and, you know, crypto and digital identities, that's the only way to really protect yourself in the cyber world.
Okay.
So it's been a passion for me, and, you know, like to catch the crooks. So it's been just a natural evolution of.
Okay. So we have one of those inspectors with us who's always looking for those wanting to take an opportunity.
So I think the question I'm also asking is, like, you've done this, and in most instances it would have been done as part of a large organization, as part of government or some government division. The decision you made was to go and do something that would normally be quite a national kind of thing and do it privately. What kind of headspace is involved in making or taking that leap of faith? Because this is not just, I'm going to go make some stuff. this is part of how we run the country.
this isn't like, let's produce a widget. You know?
No,
it's
not.
This is serious stuff.
This is like upper echelon stuff. So what does it take to make that choice?
Yeah, we've actually evolved as we've grown. Yeah. So initially we focus on SSL certificates. SSL is, we're all using it when we do internet banking, and it goes HTTPS. Mm-hmm. So in the initial years, we focus on identifying banks and commerce sites so that when you deal with them, you know, it is a secure path from where you type in. So then we just took it further to then actually identify the person on the other side, the individual that's dealing with the bank or the government. Mm. So it's just naturally evolved. And as the cyber business, you know, everybody's going digital. So you do need the elements of trust in that you have in the real world, in the cyberspace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, I think, you know, in the past, we used to talk about, you know, my word is my bond. I do business on a handshake. You know, those types of terms was the way business was conducted maybe 20, 30 years ago. The concept of, I look at somebody, I look them in the eye, and I know whether I can trust them. I mean, trust is fundamental to what we do. And here now we're in a world where we don't get to see who we're interacting with. In fact, it amazes me how much we manage to do as individuals without ever meeting or seeing the person on the other side of the transaction. It's actually mind-blowing the levels of trust that we've moved to. And I think my perspective is, unfortunately, it's almost assumed trust often. Because I talk to you on email, I can trust you. I mean, you must be a trustworthy person because you emailed me. You know, it's like, no, sorry, the world doesn't work that way. Now, just tell us a little bit about, okay, so you said you were in national intelligence. Give us a little bit more background. What made you jump into this world of entrepreneurship? What was that kind of one catalyst thing that made you say, I want to do this?
Yeah, I didn't immediately start my own business. After 9 years at intelligence, it evolved. So it was, I saw the gap, got excited about, you know, the space, didn't want to work for a corporate, didn't like the corporate politics, and
Okay, now you've mentioned something that I think is really key and something that we focus on and I want to identify for the listeners is the fact that you were excited about what you saw. Because I think lots of people kind of go, well, should I start this business? But if you look at the interaction around the business idea or concept, the excitement, they may be a little excited, but if they don't have that real passion and energy and connection with, let's call it, their subject matter, this is going to be a real challenge. And the first obstacles that arrive on the scene, if you don't have that excitement and that desire to push through, it's really going to make it difficult to be successful from that perspective.
Now, it's critical to be passionate about what you do. It mustn't feel like a job.
Exactly. Now, what do you see as critical elements for business in South Africa and in the South African environment in terms of the whole promotion of information security? Because we all interact around information and information security, but surely we're all part of the ecosystem, and you know, if we do certain things, we drive certain behaviors and we get, let's call it, a desired outcome. And if we do other things, we'll get a less than desirable outcome. What are the things that in your mind, from what you've experienced around information security and that trust? I mean, you're dealing with high level engagement at a government level, obviously, with things like the ID project, etc. What are the, let me call them, maybe you want to call them national impediment or national imperatives that we want to be focusing on as individuals or as companies in South Africa. What are the key things that you think are critical for us to understand? I mean, we heard earlier of where we are in the global information security rankings, 58th, if I'm not mistaken, let me read that again, 58th out of 165 countries. I suppose you could ask the question, you know, is that good or bad or whatever, you know, where are we? But when I see things like, you know, and this is on the UN's Global Cyber Security Index, when we're behind countries like Mauritius, Rwanda, Kenya, Nigeria, and Uganda, I kind of go, guys, you know what, we're South Africa, we could do better than that. We really could. So I guess the question is, you know, what are some of the things we should be thinking of in your experience? You're seeing it firsthand. You're close to the market.
We definitely need to focus on creating more awareness about cyber threats and education to people out there. Also, you shouldn't sacrifice security for convenience. And a lot of people actually think that this is what they need to do, and it's just easy. Let's quickly email. Or if I can't send it through my work email, let's use my private email. But when you send an email, it is actually sending a postcard. But people don't know it, you know, because you don't see where the mail's going. So it's creating a lot of, you know, awareness aspect.
I love that. That's going to go into my thoughts. Don't sacrifice security for convenience when it comes to cybersecurity. That's a really good thought, because I think often people perhaps do that because they don't see cybersecurity as a risk. It's almost other people's problems. You know, it's the IT department's problem to worry about cybersecurity in our organization. The fact that I've just emailed the keys to the kingdom around off a private email address because I copied the file and put it on my memory stick because it was too much pain to get it through the other system. Just, you know, scary, hey? Okay. So, I mean, you, as a company, Law Trust has grown, developed, enhanced. What has been, just give me an idea of some of the challenges you've experienced to date as an entrepreneur. I mean, you've started the company, you've grown with the company. You're a woman CEO. What are some of the challenges that you've seen out there? I mean, this is a woman CEO in the fintech cyber world. What are some of the things you're seeing out
security
there?
World.
Security world. Security world, yeah.
And IT is a man's environment.
Is it a man? I was going to say, I did wonder if I could class the IT industry as the typical man's world. Because I've met some really great IT specialists who are women. So I wasn't sure if that was the way the industry views itself as being pretty much male-dominated, but I would agree with you there that it is.
I wish we had more women in IT. I'll recruit all of them.
Okay, there we go. Well, we've met an entire woman-run management team in a chemical company at Blendl Chemicals, Judy Snasky and her team. So, yeah, we're looking for a woman-run team in the IT security space. There we go.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's really a skills shortage in South Africa. So, you know, at the moment, you know, you're just trying to get skilled people. And as we grow, we're almost 90 people already. And it's, you know, so we are gathering guys. We have a lot of programs to train people internally as well and to... And then, you know, coding and getting women excited about cybersecurity and make them see it's an industry where they could actually grow and fulfill a whole career.
So one of the things that I'm curious about is you started out in 2006, and in 2006, I'm wondering if, you know, when you start a company like this, are people convinced that they need this product yet?
No.
So as far as challenges go, and that is one of the biggest challenges, you're working with a world that doesn't necessarily believe they need you. How do you go about overcoming that challenge and making yourself valid and relevant in what are probably other very nuts and bolts kinds of businesses as well, where people are the knowers of things and your expertise is very questionable in relation to their own expertise?
Fortunately, our business has been growing because crime has been growing and digital crime. So
every time there's a crime, you're like, yay!
Well, we develop fraud management systems. Okay. So we do the whole spectrum, of security. Yeah. And, you know, when we started Law Trust, we had to really physically explain what is a digital identity. Now people come to us, they want, you know, strong authentication, or they want to digitally sign. Because when you actually digitally sign, it's a much, give you much more forensics than actually a wet signature.
Okay.
So the moment you digitally sign, it timestamps that transaction, and you know you have a full audit trail.
Okay.
But I just think of myself, I am our worst customer. I use all our products, and I give the guys a lot of slack on it. But if for the signing perspective, when you do a contract, you like get to version 17, then eventually you sign, but you're not sure, did somebody change a zero or add a not or something? So now in the forensics, you know, of a digital trail, you know, you can see this document has been tampered with since you last worked on it.
Okay.
So it is an enabler. So we take care of the security, but we also need to make it convenient that people would want to use it. They mustn't try and find ways of not using the security.
Okay. So you're saying the environment actually made your business viable.
Yeah, and there's regulations. So now with Poppy coming out, you know, you need to look after your customers' information. So that's driving our encryption business, encrypting databases. So the digital signing site Law Trust has been the first company in South Africa to be accredited to do advanced electronic signatures.
Okay.
So when you sign electronically using our signatures, it's actually been seen by the court as a prima facie evidence.
Oh.
So it is. Those are all drivers for the growth of the business.
Okay.
Now, I mean, you know, for me, I kind of step back and I go, okay, so where to from here? Where does this world actually go? I mean, I love the there was a company, South African company, who decided not to invest in infrastructure around the internet back in the day because it wasn't going to work and it was going to fail. Well, needless to say, that company is no longer with us. An IT company, because they thought they
might know it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're looking at me and you know exactly what I'm talking about. But they turned around and said, no, this internet thing, it's just a fad and it's going to kind of fade and die on us. We're not going to focus our energy there and we're not going to spend any resources enabling our business for that business model. And they went off, you know, in their own direction. In much the same way, I think often companies and businesses are at risk of going, well, is cybersecurity really a thing that I have to worry about? I mean, if you say to somebody, you know, listen, you need to actually have a cyber security strategy and you need to understand your digital security risks in your business as a, you know, as somebody who's accountable for risk management in your business, people may look at me and say, really? Like, do I have to? It's like almost, you know, like, I can't believe that I'm going to have to sit and do this. Like, why bother? And I think, you know, the pace of change has definitely shown people that what is almost bleeding edge, as you referred to it earlier, cutting edge stuff, becomes mainstream really quick.
Becomes leading, yeah.
Yeah, becomes leading and mainstream quite quickly. So my question is, so where does this go in the future? I mean, what's coming at us? You know, digital identities, you know, the digital cert type of environment, digital signatures. What's the next wave that's coming at us from a security enhancement perspective?
I think the next wave is adoption of digital. You know, everybody's going digital, so it's just making sure that you are protecting your identity, your bank details, to be vigilant like you are in driving to work. You'll see if somebody's following you and you won't, you know, do stupid things. But in the digital world, you know, it's in the future, we're not going to have to explain to people you have to protect yourself and your identity in the cyber world. It's going to be natural.
That's interesting. So it goes from being, let's call it on the periphery, to it's just normal business. You know, like I get up in the morning and I eat breakfast. When I engage in a structurally sound, digitally secure environment, and it's just par for the course. It's like picking up your car keys and just driving off, Steph.
Yeah, but
normal.
I'm feeling very challenged by that, by the idea that that's going to be how it is going to be, because I become so aware of the fact that the more I live in a digital world, I mean, everything I do almost is on a digital world. I see my clients digitally, the whole tutti frutti. I'm becoming less vigilant. It's as if, you know, I didn't lock my door last night, nobody broke in, so hey, I'll just not lock my door again. It's almost as if I've become indifferent to the threats that are out there. So I'm feeling very challenged by this idea that people are going to be more vigilant in the future. I think about the fact that, and I'm going back to social media, you know, people share all the information, like as in everything.
Overshare.
Way overshare. and that's because, you know,
they think they're anonymous.
Yes. There's this idea of it's on the one hand, it's the anonymity, and on the other hand, it's just how it's done. So I'm feeling very challenged by the idea that simultaneously people are revealing so much on the internet, and you're saying they can be more vigilant.
They need to be more vigilant.
So that's the need.
I think there's the need. Whether they will be or not is quite scarily the reality. Yeah.
But if you also think how many people have stories now about their identity being stolen or receiving emails, it's not something that happened to somebody else.
Yes.
People are, every single individual has had a story where they would send a phishing email or money has disappeared out of their bank account.
Well, what amazes me is just how easily compromises happen. And I think we're also very... We are led to believe that if we take the appropriate steps in our world as, let's call them, consumers, that if we take care of our digital security, we're okay. But there's also an added, it's a double-edged sword, because I've had scenarios, for example, my wife had her Uber account compromised, and there was no phishing that happened, and Uber kind of didn't know where it happened, but they very quickly refunded the R4,500 that was used on the account. So I don't know if that's maybe an indicator that there was an issue in their world. What was really interesting was that they managed to, the parties involved did this at 3 a.m. in the morning, and they managed to change not only passwords, but actual login user ID. So they had, let's call it my wife's credit card details, but she had no way of accessing the account. She got sent emails saying this has been changed, that's been changed. But as far as we could see, there was absolutely no way to change your username on Uber, yet it was changed. So, you know, your logical way is if something gets compromised, go into your profile quickly, reset your password, it sends you the email, you controlling your email, and you know, and you reset yourself and lock somebody else out. Well, we couldn't do that because the username was not changed on us.
Oh, yeah.
So from that perspective, you know, that for me was a real eye-opener around how blasé we are. In terms of, we go, we do our bit, and we think we're okay. Mm. But if something happens inside an organization, like they clearly had happen at that point, and somebody gets in and does something in their world, suddenly you as a consumer, you're exposed, okay? And you don't realize just how exposed one is.
Mm.
I mean, to be honest with you, the only thing that was lucky was that because they happened to, there were two cards linked to that particular account, they used one card. And then they made the mistake of using another card, and the second card that they used on the account happened to be the one with the SMSs, 24 hours. The other one was only notifying during, you know, normal hours. So we, 3 a.m. in the morning, we weren't being notified.
Mm.
But you wake up at 4 a.m. with your phone buzzing with SMSs from Uber with 900 Rand Uber trips in Canada. You realize, and you're lying in your bed in South Africa, you realize you have a problem here. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that for me brought home very quickly the risk that it's not just your security that's compromised. If somebody else's security is compromised, you kind of get taken along for the ride. And yeah, unfortunately for our dear friends at Uber, my wife is no longer a customer and will never be a customer because she felt her privacy and her trust in their system is now compromised. And now I look at this and I go, well, you know, people, businesses, please realize that if you don't treat security of both your customers' data as well as your own internal security elements properly, you actually put your relationships with your customers on the line. It's not just anymore about, oh, well, it was just a security incident, moving on. It actually destroys that customer that you've worked really hard and spent a lot of money to acquire, suddenly becomes a challenge.
And the reputation of the organization.
Obviously,
as well.
That's a huge thing.
And I think companies are becoming more responsible because of POPI and, you know, all the regulations in Europe that's in place. Mm. So if they don't do it, then they get fined. So
exactly.
There is additional.
Yeah, there's huge issues if stuff gets disclosed, etc. Now, go for it.
So, Chrissy, it's so good that Richard brought up Uber, because obviously Uber's going through a lot of challenges right now, and one of it is the CEO was removed from his position as CEO because he's one of the biggest challenges and weaknesses in the business. You've been around for
11 years.
11 years. I was going to say 16 years now. You've been around for 11 years. What have you done to make sure that your company grows from just you as the starter and the founder to 90 people that you've got in the business now in such a short period of time?
Yeah, the scaling issue. I think a big challenge for an entrepreneur is actually to make the transition to go from an entrepreneur to a leader.
Yeah.
And that's been a challenge for ourselves as well, because as an entrepreneur, you're very controlling and you want to actually do everything yourself, because then you know it works out. But if you want to really scale the business, you need to empower the management and that you can actually then focus on the business and not in the business.
Mm. And how did you overcome that challenge? Because it's an enormous challenge.
Oh, I'm still battling with it.
At least she's honest. Christy, thank you very much. It's been great chatting to you. It's been great learning a little bit more about your world. And yeah, I must say, a world that leaves me a little bit concerned, because I don't think you ever feel... I think it's an area of like almost personal vulnerability. You feel like somebody can get into that space with you. So appreciate your thoughts. Thank you for your hard work with our Department of Home Affairs on our own national system. Really good to meet the provider behind that project. That's really great. That was Christy Meheri, CEO of Law Trust, the information security solutions provider. Stay with us. Next up is the Youth Leadership Platform.
This is CliffCentral.com.